Okay, the appointed hour having arrived, I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. I heard there might be an amendment, a change to, I guess that's to a previous minutes. So as far as I know, these minutes for January 29th are fine. Would anyone like to make a motion to approve the minutes for January 29th? Okay. Representative Cagle, thank you. Moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved for January 29th. Representative Mason, did you have a motion?
I would like to move a correction to the January 24th minutes. And it was Tricia Malio, and I left the thing with the other committee. Sorry about that. Okay. But Tricia was also one of the testifiers. It wasn't in the minutes as we approved them.
Okay. The motion, so that was on the equal rights. So on one of the equal rights amendment bills, Ramsey County Commissioner Trista Mattis Castillo testified. Apparently the minutes did not reflect that. So this is just to add her name to the minutes. Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, first answer was.
Brief question. So the amendment to the January 24th. So we're amending the January 24th minutes to reflect that Ramsey County Commissioner Trista
Mattis Castillo.
Yep. Was one of the, just adding her to a list of
testifiers. Just testified, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for your diligence to the minutes, Representative Mason. So all those in favor of the motion to amend the January 24th minutes, as discussed, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. So there are two bills that were re-referred. Representative Kwong?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the pieces of information in our packet is not signed and doesn't have a person's name. I mean, the ones that have the logo of an organization are pretty easy to tell who that might be. However,
okay.
You know, it'd be nice if we actually knew who was submitting the testimony.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Kwom. I'm not exactly sure how this would be addressed. I mean, it's the first sentence it says, Chair Freiberg, members, my name is George Beck. This is a member of the public who wanted to testify on one of the bills before us and was not able to be here, so he submitted written testimony. So he's the one who submitted it,
okay.
So we wanted to make sure it was available to members, and it wasn't brought forward by any specific member. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I was looking for please vote. And then thank you and the name.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you for making sure we're following all the procedures here. So there were two bills, House File 94 and House File 45, that were referred to Government Operations from the Elections Subcommittee, we'll be taking those up today. The first one is House File 94, Representative Vang, if you could come forward. I have asked... this isn't going to be a hard and fast rule in the committee, but since there was already testimony taken in the elections subcommittee, my goal is to limit testimony on bills that have already been discussed. So I asked Representative Vang and Representative Schultz if they could kind of keep testimony to the minimum. I know we have several amendments also, and I want to make sure we have time for those. If there is somebody who was unavailable to testify in the subcommittee, I'd certainly consider hearing from them as well, but that's just sort of the general guideline I'm going to try to follow when we do have bills referred from the subcommittee, just so members are aware of that. Representative Vang, thank you for being here. If you could just present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Samantha Vang. HF 94 entails amending the Minnesota Statute 204C15, striking off the language on limiting voter assistance at the ballot box up to three people. I've spent years doing election work, from being an election judge to organizing nonpartisan voter engagement work through nonprofits, community organizations. My direct experience have found this law to disproportionately hurt communities with limited English proficiency and those with disabilities. We all know the 15th Amendment guarantees citizens of the U.S. the right to vote. However, I'm sure you're all aware in our history, communities of colors have been discriminated against from voting. Thus, the Voting Rights Act was established to prevent legal barriers at the state and local level from preventing underrepresented communities the right to vote. Unfortunately, this Minnesota statute violates the Voting Rights Act, particularly Section 208, which states, the VRA provides for voters who need assistance to vote by reason of blindness, disability, or inability to read or write. Any such voter may be given assistance by a person of the voter's choice, other than the voter's employer or agent of the employer or officer or agent of the voter's union. This Minnesota law limiting voter assistance up to three people violates the voter's choice when a scenario such as simply bringing my parents and my grandparents, who also don't speak English, to the polls and having to make a choice of leaving one of them out. According to the Federal Senate report, when discussing the VRA, they stressed the importance of the voter's freedom to choose his or her assister as opposed to having someone appointed by election officials to assist the voter. They understood that voters may feel apprehensive about casting a ballot in front of someone they do not know or trust, or could even be misled into voting for a candidate they did not choose. Congress determined that the right to an assister of choice is the only way to ensure that voters can exercise their right to vote without intimidation or manipulation. The only restriction imposed on the voter's choice was the employer or a representative of their union. This means an assister can even be a non-U.S. citizen or a teenage child. This is confirmed by the Texas State case where they required the translator to be a registered voter of the county the voter resided in. Ultimately, the court ruled that they can no longer require a translator to be a registered voter as it still violates the VRA. Voting can be an intimidating and complicated process, especially if you have a disability or if English is not your native language. Before I end, I would like to leave with a story of Ning Hyung, an SGU veteran. SGU stands for Secret Guerrilla Unit. They are a group of Hmong soldiers recruited by the CIA during the Vietnam War to protect and save our American brothers from our enemies. As veterans who dedicated their lives to the U.S. before touching American soil, yet experienced difficulty to fully serve as citizens of the U.S., is a disservice to the 600-plus Hmong SGU veterans in Minnesota. And it's our job to ensure that process is as easy and as welcoming as possible for all citizens of the U.S. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vang, for your presentation. One thing I forgot to mention, too, in mentioning that I was going to attempt to limit testimony, is that we do have people here, like I see the Secretary of State here. I believe there's representatives from DPS here, too, if there are any questions that members have. Representative Pawlowski?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, what's the motion on the bill?
Thank you. Thank you for catching that, Representative Pawlowski. The motion is to re-refer the bill to the General Register. Do you have a follow-up question?
Thank you. No.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Pawlowski, for catching that. Is there anybody from the public who does want to speak on this or who didn't get an opportunity to speak in the Yes, ma'am, if you could just come forward and please state your name for the record, that would be great.
Hi, my name is Frances Hall, and I am a leader of the Asian Pacific Islander Caucus with SEIU Healthcare Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hall. Please proceed with your testimony.
Okay, and then this law, the Section 208, discriminates against 45% of all minorities in the state of Minnesota. And 45% of all the ethnic backgrounds speak or read little to no English, which leaves approximately 2 million voters in the state of Minnesota unable to vote. And so we would like to see this law changed because Minnesota is a fair and ethical state, and we believe that the restriction should be lifted because of that. And 63% of the people that were polled in regards to the voting process said that they could use assistance at the polls.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members? Yes, sir. Okay. Are there any questions for this testifier, I guess I should ask? Okay. There, yep, thank you, Ms. Hall. Thank you. If you could please state your name for the record, that'd be great.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Cody Olson with the Minnesota Council on Disability. We are a state agency tasked with advising the Minnesota Legislature and the Governor's Office on policy relating to people with disabilities. And we know that voting on Election Day is an important part of civic responsibility for all U.S. citizens, especially true for citizens with disabilities. And because civic engagement is critical in social inclusion, the Council on Disability is in strong support of House File 94. The legislation will make this easier for citizens with disabilities to vote. Current law conflicts with Federal Voting Rights Act, which has been stated. There is no limit in the federal law, and Minnesota is the only state other than Arkansas that has a numerical limit on the number of voters that a person may assist in a federal election. And one clear example of how this law change could be applied is by following the footsteps of a direct support professional who may easily find themselves accompanying for people with disabilities to the polls. And under this current law, that PCA would not be able to support all of their clients, which would deprive the fourth person the liberty to vote. We can and should fix this by passing House File 94. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for this testifier? Okay. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak on this bill? Okay, I will close testimony. Is there any member discussion before we move to amendments? Okay, this seems to be moving fairly quickly. There are a couple amendments. Are there members who wish to offer these amendments? Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish to offer the A1 amendment. And it basically says that the person that would be doing the marking would need to be an individual that is a registered Minnesota voter, because frankly, we should only have people that can legally vote in Minnesota mark our ballots. And this is marking a ballot. There's no restriction that the person be from a certain location, just that they actually are authorized, registered to be able to mark a ballot.
Okay. Representative Vang, do you have any comments on the amendment?
Yeah, I will just refer back to the Texas case I brought up where the court ultimately ruled that, you know, having a registered voter to translate is still in violation of the VRA, and so they insist that the voter's choice is pretty broad, and they having this amendment will still violate the VRA.
Mr. Chair, I thought the author said a registered voter from that precinct, which is different than a registered voter from the entire state. Plus, clarification, was that a Texas court?
Yes.
Representative Vang.
Yes, that is.
Representative Plum.
Thank you. With no disrespect to Texas, but Texas court decisions are not binding within the state of Minnesota. Our judicial court works with our statutes, verbiage, and constitution. Mm-hmm. So the relevancy is stretched on multiple points, both jurisdiction and the fact that it was a much more constrained parameter of that specific precinct, and for a translator. This is a person that would be marking the physical ballots in our state. And therefore, this is only saying that of the millions of people in the state of Minnesota that are registered, they would be allowed to perform this function. I'm not seeing a whole lot of criteria. It could be a 10-year-old. It could be, you know, we just don't have a lot of parameters on here. But by saying it's a registered, then we do have the parameters that it's somebody that is of legal age and is a resident of the state of Minnesota and is registered to vote. So those parameters at least allow some sort of control.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Kwong. I know decisions from courts in other states don't, as you said correctly, don't have binding value, precedential value in Minnesota, but they may have persuasive precedential value. I do see, oh, Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this point, if Mr. Gehring may be able to look into this, I think that the case is actually in violation of federal law and not Texas state law, if Mr. Gehring can check into that.
So, Mr. Gehring, do you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, so the Texas case is not a state court case. It is a federal court case. It is a federal district court case, so it does specifically, as Representative Kwan mentioned, apply only to the Texas statute, but it is a federal decision, so there is some potential that a court would view that case as persuasive in Minnesota, but it's not specifically binding in Minnesota. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kwan, or Representative Lee, did you have a follow-up to that? Okay. Representative Kwan.
What circuit was that federal case in?
Mr. Garrett.
Is it the same circuit as Minnesota is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kwan, it's a different circuit than Minnesota.
So, thank you. I do see the Secretary of State here. I believe he may have some comments on this, too, and may be able to offer some clarification. You know the drill, I guess, Secretary Simon, but if you could just state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. If I may, and I want to be quick and not just repeat what we did in the other committee, but one of the reasons the same reason that I think the overall bill is particularly important is the reason why, with respect, I think the amendment is not a good idea, and that is, even if you have reservations or doubts, members, about the wisdom of this as policy, I think if we don't pass Representative Vang's bill, we are buying a lawsuit. We've already been contacted before the election by a large Minneapolis law firm on behalf of a client. We think we know who the client is, but we don't know for sure. They threatened before the election to sue the state of Minnesota. I have to tell you, I've given up a long time ago guessing with certainty what courts are going to do, but in light of the Texas case, which was a federal court case and a federal appeals court case, and unusually the state of Texas chose not to appeal that case. That's pretty remarkable. I think it was a subtle acknowledgement, perhaps, that even they thought that the Texas law had gone too far because they declined to appeal. And so my judgment at this point would be any plaintiffs would have a pretty good shot at overturning the law because of Section 208 of the Voting Rights Act, which says that the voter has his or her choice of who to assist them. And if you limit it based on the numerical limit, which we share only with Arkansas, or another kind of limit, like a registered voter, then that would be in conflict with the federal law. So as I see it, as to the bill, the choice before us is we can do this the easy way or the hard way. The easy way is to pass this bill and get a bad law off the books. The hard way is to persist with this law, have someone sue us, lose, and pay a heck of a lot of attorney's fees to the other side after a long process. Either way, I think the law is probably on its way out. It's just a question of whether we want to do it easy or hard. My problem with the amendment is it's the exact same situation. It's a limitation that appears, at least, to be in conflict with the Voting Rights Act. So it wouldn't cure one of the very things that Representative Vang is trying to cure. It would just replace one kind of restriction with another kind of restriction.
Yeah. Thank you, Secretary Simon. Representative Kwan has a question, I believe.
Yes, a couple things, Mr. Secretary. One, since you're experienced in litigation on election laws, having lost the case at the U.S. Supreme Court, plus having had to appeal the data request that was lost in, I think, Ramsey County, what is the approximate cost of that, you know, your office has incurred with these types of lawsuits?
Secretary Simon?
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, it's pretty regular that the state gets sued over state statutes. The two things that you were talking about, particularly the first one that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, it wasn't suing our office. It was suing the state of Minnesota for a law that was passed in the 1980s. We were named as a defendant, which is necessary in the law when you sue an agency that is in charge of implementing the statute, but we didn't write the statute. It was put in place in 1987 or 1988. In terms of cost, we can get you those figures, but, you know, that's what happens when you're a state agency and you're in charge of implementing a law, and someone doesn't like the law, you're named as a defendant. So it's not that our office has incurred that expense. In fact, it was argued at the Supreme Court by Hennepin County, not our office. But we can get you that information.
Representative Kwan.
Mr. Chair, thank you for clarifying that is just part of what happens, and it was a state statute. So that wasn't a major big deal to the to your Secretary of State's office. But isn't this talking about a state statute? And you inferred that it was a commonplace event, so therefore, I'm a little bit confused about not having the fear on the others, especially pursuing multiple appeals to it, as opposed to here where there's the possibility and differentiating between, because federal law does have regulations on voting of age, citizenship, residency, etc. That basically all this does is ensure the parameters for the person actually physically marking the ballot to meet the same federally, you know, guideline type parameters of age, residency, and citizenship. So I'm not seeing a lot of conflict with both the content of the federal, you know, guidelines with elections and the intent of making sure that the only people that mark ballots meet the minimum age, the residency, and citizenship requirements that, you know, are part of federal statute. So I guess I'm confused by your strong and vocal opposition to this.
Did you have a comment? Mr. Chair, members, I just want to clarify. So you're free to disagree with my analysis, but I would urge members to look at 208 of the Voting Rights Act. You're right, Representative Quam, there are other restrictions, of course, age and citizenship as to voting, but Section 208 of the Voting Rights Act, as the Federal Appeals Court found, is very clear. When it comes to assistance for purposes of disability or language, specifically, the voter has to have their choice. I didn't write that law. You didn't write that law. That's what it says. I'd invite you to read the Fifth Circuit decision out of Texas as well. I'm just hazarding a guess, which is always a hazard in itself about what a court will do. But as I assess the odds and look at that case and look how analogous it is with the law in Minnesota, my judgment is at least that a plaintiff would have a very good chance. And you're right. Agencies get sued all the time. I'm just giving that as a point of information for the legislature that, you know, fair warning that if this law isn't repealed, there's very likely to be litigation. And in my judgment, there's a reasonable chance, more than a reasonable chance of success on the other side, which will cost the state money. That's all I'm saying. And you're free to disagree. You could read the same statute in the same case and say that my analysis was bad or wrong, but I'm just giving you what my assessment is.
Quick question, Secretary Simon. If this amendment were to go on, would this prevent somebody who has a teen child, teen daughter, teen son, who may speak English, would this prevent them, you know, say they're under 18, would this prevent them from assisting?
Mr. Chair, I think so. I think it would. Another example, if I can get a little personal. So my mother was not a U.S. citizen. My father had a disability. So if my mother had already assisted three people, she couldn't help her own husband at the polling place.
Okay.
Under this amendment.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, again, if there was a family member who had a green card or was a DACA recipient, they, you know, under the amendment, they also wouldn't be allowed to provide this assistance to their family member or their neighbor.
Secretary Simon.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, that's my interpretation. Correct.
Right. Oh, and Mr. Chair, a roll call. Please.
Okay. Roll call's been requested. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to make a comment. I'm looking at this as the voter needs assistance. Just, it could be interpreter, it could be anything. And they also need to have confidence in this. How many other times would we say an interpreter has to be a certain age and have certain criteria other than the fact that they're doing the job that they've been asked to do?
Okay. Thank you for the comment, Representative Mason. I don't see any additional member questions, and a roll call has been requested.
Oh.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh, I, yeah. Representative Lilly, did you have a comment?
No, not to the amendment to the bill.
Sorry. Okay, sure. Sounds good. So a roll call's been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Sauk. No. Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash. Representative Quam.
C.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West.
Yes.
There being 11 nays and 7 ayes, the amendment does not prevail. And just so members are aware, too, the new order of the roll call was a request specifically of Representative Zerwas, so it seemed...
I'm tired of being at the bottom.
Yeah. Yes. Starting, your name starting with a Z, I don't blame you. So, okay. There is I have another amendment that's been submitted, an A2. Is there a member who would like to offer the A2? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Vang, I guess I'm a little concerned about the integrity of the person that's picked. It's fine if the person has familial knowledge of each other, but if another person is selected to do the marking, I think it's important that we know who that person is, just to make sure that they are who they say they are. And so with this, the spirit of this amendment is basically just to know who somebody is and that we can go back and look, because I would hate to have somebody ask for assistance and then a ballot is not marked according to what their wishes are, and then we have no way of going back and saying, hey, you know, what were you thinking and what were you doing? And that is truly just to keep the integrity of the vote. I think it's important that we do something like this.
So you're offering the
A2
amendment.
So I'd like to move, yeah.
Yeah, move the A2 amendment. Okay. Representative Vang, did you have a comment on the amendment?
Yes, I do. I'll ask, you know, although I do see the concern, I think it is, doesn't contribute to the process of making it easier and making it welcoming for the voters. You know, I can see this as an outing for the voter from disclosing something that they may consider something personal. You know, we should be sensitive to someone that may not want to disclose that they have a disability or a barrier. I also see this as creating a fiscal impact to election judges, requiring additional training, additional waiting time, also for the voter, and I don't think that contributes to a healthy, welcoming environment. And so I ask the members to vote against this amendment.
Representative Tice?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vang. I just really feel that if there's going to be somebody going to help them mark the ballot anyway, there is going to be a knowledge that there is something unique going on. I just really think for the integrity of the vote, it would be nice to know who that person is. Thank you.
Secretary Simon, did you want to weigh in? Okay, he's declining, it appears. So any other additional member comments or questions? Okay. So the Representative Tice has moved the A2 amendment. I guess I'll just say I share Representative Vang's concern, so I will be voting no on it. So the A2 amendment has been moved. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? No. The noes have it. The amendment is not adopted. Okay.
How do I represent it also?
Those are all the amendments I have. House File 94 is before us. Are there any additional comments or questions? Representative Lilly, I think you had said you wanted to say something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bang, thank you very much for bringing this forward. I think you know, that it's good to have people in the ballot box and just being able to express themselves. You know, I'm not sure why they'd want to vote for Quam, but apparently some people want to. Sorry, I'm just teasing. I'm sure you could say the same thing about me. No, I think it's really important, and you hate to have any limitations on that. I've seen ballots in the past, you know, in Minnesota history that had multiple languages, and you know, of Norwegian and German and all sorts of different languages, and so it's a long tradition in Minnesota to try and include as many people to be able to vote as possible, and I think. Yeah, that's what you're trying to do, and thank you for that.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the subject of retraining was brought up, and I can understand that if some of the amendments were done, but I also think that there's probably going to have to be retraining relative to all the election judges because we're changing the rules. So I'm curious, and I know we're not a finance committee, but is there a fiscal note on this?
I'm not aware that one has been requested. Representative Vang?
Yep, there's no cost. It's just a policy change.
Okay. Representative Vogel?
Well, Mr. Chair, we heard that there was the potential for retraining on the amendments, but I would also suggest there's going to be retraining here because we're changing the way the process is, and I would think if you're an election judge, you would have to know that there's a difference now between what was the case and what is the case now.
I'm looking to Secretary Simon. I mean, I know the election judges are trained, prior to every election cycle, and I would think that, you know, changes in law happen regularly, so adding them into the training wouldn't pose any major additional cost, but Secretary Simon, if you could maybe respond to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you just said, which is every year there are a lot of technical changes. We'll have a technical bill this year. They inevitably change things about what happens in the polling place, and I can't recall a time when there's ever been a fiscal note around this. And keep in mind, the incidence of this kind of help is not regular in all places around the state, so I understand, Representative Vogel, where you're going with this, but that hasn't been our experience. That there's, it's not really retraining. It's just a note that's made in the course of regular training that the ceiling doesn't exist anymore.
Okay. Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I believe when the discussion was held on the A1 amendment, the subject came up that there was going to have to possibly be additional cost in training, and I think it was Secretary Simon that might have said that, but I'm not sure. If that was the case that it was said, then I'm just suggesting, I think we have to be fiscally responsible with this stuff, and if there was going to have to be retraining that was going to be an additional cost for the A1, then my assumption is that any change would cost that, and I just like, if nothing else, clarification that there wouldn't have been any cost with the A1, and if it moves ahead without a fiscal note, because that's the case, then that's fine, but I think if we're going to bring it up for one amendment and not the bill itself, that's probably not being consistent.
Secretary Simon, comment?
All I would say is, you know, what this bill is the absence of something, not the presence of something. So it may be, I don't believe I made the comment, Representative Vogel, on the A1 amendment, but this bill is about removing a restriction, not adding a new requirement to track something. It's actually the absence of something. So if anything, I think it might ease the burden. But in terms of the finances, and you're right, Representative Vogel, too, it's important to be fiscally prudent, but I have to tell you, there are many more significant changes than this that occur routinely to the election laws in terms of what happens in the polling place. And to my knowledge, they've never had a fiscal cost.
Yeah. Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize if I misquoted. I thought that word was used during this conversation on the A1, but if not, I'm sorry to have suggested something that maybe wasn't said.
No problem. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, so with the advice of the Secretary of State, the Chair is determining that amendments and bills that just affect things that would be part of the normal course of training would not be considered to be fiscally impactful and therefore would maintain as being policy. Or are we disagreeing as a committee with the advice of the Secretary of State?
Well, I mean, he can provide, thank you, Representative Quam. The Secretary can provide clarification. I mean, I heard him say that at least this change would not have additional cost, and so I don't see this motion as disagreeing with him. You know, these will kind of be, that seems like a safe general rule, that if it's just a change in law that doesn't require, that can be handled as part of the normal training, then it probably would not have a fiscal impact and would not need to go to a finance committee. I can't say for certain that that'll happen in every case, but it seems like it's probably safe as a general rule. Secretary Simon, I don't know if you have any comments.
Mr. Chair and members, I would say, you know, we're very active during the session with fiscal note requests of all kinds, and we will be as forthright as we can about whether we think there is one, but I can't imagine that there's a cost to this. This happens pretty routinely.
Yeah, and I know that I believe the next bill that we're discussing today has had a fiscal note requested and will be going to a finance committee. So, okay. Are there any additional member comments? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just for my understanding, it would be the record keeping that would affect the cost and not so much the training. To the amendment.
Oh, sounds like a comment more than a question. So thank you for that clarification. Any additional comments from members or questions? Okay, so House File 94 is before us. The motion is to refer it to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Your bill is on its way. The next bill before us is House File 45. And Representative Schultz, I'd explained to members earlier that we're attempting to limit testimony here just since there already was testimony in the subcommittee. But if there is somebody who didn't get an opportunity to, you know, they're certainly more than welcome to come up and speak. So, I will move that House File 45 be recommended for re-referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Schultz, if you'd like to present your bill, please.
Sure. I just want to thank the chair and members of the committee for hearing this bill. House File 45 is often referred to as the Automatic Voter Registration Bill, but essentially it streamlines the voter registration process in Minnesota by allowing individuals the opportunity to register to vote when they fill out an application for a new or renewed driver's license, a learner's permit, or an identification card. 15 states plus the District of Columbia, with many with bipartisan support, have already authorized AVR with great success in registering individuals. AVR will make voting more efficient. It will reduce lines at the polling locations. It will allow transmission of electronic information and more accurate information to update people's addresses. And it will likely reduce costs because of less paperwork and less errors. So this is a opt-out option rather than an opt-in option to register on the form. So that's the one big key difference. And recently, last year, the McKnight, Joyce, and Kresge Foundation funded a survey of the Great Lakes region. And in Minnesota, they found that 64% of Minnesota voters support automatic voter registration. And I think we have a couple testifiers lined up to testify.
Sure. Are there any questions for Representative Schultz before we get to testimony? Okay, and she'll be sticking around, obviously. Okay, if I could, whoever is interested in testifying, raise your hand. Are you sure we have a couple testifiers, Representative Schultz?
I thought we did. But the Secretary of State is happy to testify.
Secretary Simon.
I think their testimony are letters in your packet as well. They testified. I think we had five testifiers at Elections Committee.
Thank you. Welcome, Secretary Simon. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. Thanks for your time, members. And I don't want to repeat what was said in the committee or what Representative Schultz has already told you, except to say this. I just want to emphasize something that she said. You hear this title, automatic voter registration. Sounds pretty sweeping, doesn't it? Really, there's much less here than meets the eye in many senses. We already have a motor voter law, as almost every state does. You go in, you either get or renew your driver's license, you take the iChart test, you do all that, and there's a form, if you've ever noticed, that has a box on it. Next time you'll notice it. And it says, check here if you wish also to be registered to vote, because it's the very same information that's required. It's a great overlap, so people have that opt-in. The only thing this bill changes, and I mean the only thing, is that now the presumption is reversed. Now it's an opt-out. You check the box if you don't want to be registered to vote. All the other steps in voter registration from A to Z remain exactly the same. And I just want to step back and zoom out a little bit. Words like automatic, or even in a context which this bill doesn't touch, but things like online voter registration, which we passed in 2013, there's nothing automatic about it. Real human beings are filtering and screening. Some people get the impression that when you register online, make some keystrokes, and then suddenly some computer somewhere decides things. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen under current law, and none of that would happen under this law. So really, despite the sweeping title, there's less here in a sense that meets the eye. One other point I want to mention that I don't think has been mentioned. I know that in this legislature and in this room, I'm sure, from time to time or now, there have been people who have reservations about, maybe they're not completely opposed to, but have reservations about same day or election day voter registration. And you know the narrative around that, that some people think it's too risky for some security reasons. I guess my message to those who have had or do have reservations about same day or election day registration, which we've had since 1974, is if you are in that camp, if you have reservations and concerns, you should really, really like this bill. Because under this bill, I would guess, we could have an 80 or 90 or more percent drop in the number of people who use election day or same day voter registration. Why? Because they will already have been in the system from the last time that they got or renewed a driver's license. So if you're concerned about the ability and the security tied to election day or same day registration, and reasonable minds can disagree in this room and have for many years around here, but if that's true, you should really like this bill. Wouldn't you want somebody to be in the system a day or a week or a month or a year before the election so that all the filtering and screening and vetting that our office and the counties do can be done then and not on election day? So that, I assume, is the reason why it's passed in red states, in blue states, across the political spectrum, because it really is, as Representative Schultz said, about cleaning up the voting rolls, making them more secure, making it more of a modernized system, so that you only have a very few people at this point who would be registering same day. It would be mostly, the overwhelming majority would be people who are already in the system. So those are the two points that I don't think had been talked about that I wanted to mention. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Sure. Thank you, Secretary Simon. I think Representative Zerwas has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Secretary, did I hear that right, that it's your testimony today and your belief that if we pass this law, that if we enact this law, that same day same day voter registration could drop 80 to 90%? Did I hear that right?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, that's sort of back of the napkin math, but it would be an overwhelming percentage, I would imagine, would be in the system. I'd want to take a look, and maybe those numbers exist in other states. Not all of the states have or had same day voter registration, but if you just think about it, people would already have given that new address, given that new information, that new name, if they change their name for some reason, marriage or otherwise, that would already be in the system beforehand, a day or a week or a month before, instead of having to make that call on election day. That's what I'm saying. And I think it would be a drastic drop. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be more cautious about it and tell you what other states' experiences. I think it would be a drastic drop in election day registration.
Representative Zerwas.
Well, I'm just trying to balance this out, because we're being told that, you know, it's a opt-out instead of an opt-in, not a big change. So is it your thought then that it could increase by 80 to 90% the number of people? I mean, we're just having people that are already getting their licenses, instead of not being compelled to check a box, just handing the form in. And so your estimation is that 80 to 90% of the people that are not registered on the day of the election have gotten a state ID, a permit, or a driver's license, but just didn't check the box?
Secretary Simon.
Actually, no, Representative Zerwas. Good question, and maybe I should be more precise. And let me give you the number that I do know. In the last election in 2018, 130,000 Minnesotans registered on the day of the election with a state driver's license or a state ID card, okay? Of those, I would have to imagine, of that subset, and that's not everyone who registered same day, but those who registered in that fashion same day, I would have to imagine, and I will get back to you and look at other states. But if you just think about it, there's probably only a pretty small percent that literally just moved here from Connecticut or Idaho or California. Probably, I'm guessing, most of them are Minnesotans who've already been here. Maybe they had a change of address. Maybe they've never voted before. They've lived here all their life. For whatever reason, they wanted to vote in this election. It just stands to reason that it would be a drastic reduction. I know that has been the experience in other states. You know, I throw out 80-90%. I think it could be as high as that, but I'll try to get you some harder numbers on that from other states' experience.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the Secretary of State, you just mentioned 130K same-day registrants utilizing their driver's license or an ID, knowing that at least in 2016, there were over 160,000 that registered, didn't have a driver's license or an ID, and had to go through Social Security office. How many of the same day in this last election were sent through the SSA verification site?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, we can get you that number. I don't know that offhand. I'd have to do a little math on that and look at some of the other ways that we haven't discussed. So I want to mislead you. I'll get you the precise number. I think we can get that number for you or something very close.
Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, remembering what was in the legislative audit report, I think it was a few thousand that went through we'd probably actually have to look through the early voting because they register and could early vote during that time period be relevant. Clarification on your statement that reassuring us that people are registered through this auto registration, go through the same processes, but in the legislative audit plus the court case that you're appealing the decision of, there wasn't the availability of clear information as to how many bad of the tens of thousands of bad registrations actually voted and got counted in the election. Do you have that number for 2016, or do we have to wait for the additional activities of the legislative auditor to get a picture? I know they did a sampling and saw about several percent or 10%. May have or probably did vote.
Secretary Simon?
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, I'm hesitant to go off in a side alley about the OLA report, which is a good report and happy to share it with members. And you're right, there's the piece that what I think you're getting at is the Social Security piece. And as you know, the Office of Legislative Auditor is going to come out with some memo or supplemental memo probably in the next few months. So we're working with them. We're providing them everything. We've given them the keys to the car, so to speak. They've got all the data they need. They have full and total and unfiltered access to the statewide voter registration system. So we'll see what they say, but in the end, they'll come out with that number. I could go on a long time, and I don't want to take the committee's time and talk about that issue, but I don't think this is, from my perspective, the hearing to do that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll just clarify that it wasn't just the Social Security verification, those, 16,000 plus, and I think it was 15,000 mismatch that came for 2018. There was some sampling to try and determine how many of the bad restriction, you know, you sent out address verification and other issues that popped up, and it wasn't just limited to those 15,000-16,000 mismatches, but they did sampling of just bad registrations and found several percent actually voted and got counted. And the reference to the lawsuit was a nonpartisan group was trying to find out the data to be able to tell how many registrants actually voted, because once you find it's bad, you're excluding them from the data request, even though they registered like everybody else on the list and very likely voted like everybody else on the list, but there isn't the capability of independently studying. And the reason for this line of questioning is the validity of concern. I mean, there was a U.S. Supreme Court by Justice Stevens who was more of a liberal judge in 08 that in the opinion that there is current present cases of voter fraud and issues, and so I'm taking to heart that we should be doing the due diligence to try and verify. And this bill goes from you actively opt into it's being automatic, you have to opt out. We could be inadvertently registering people that aren't able or shouldn't be voting, and if they actually saw and go and vote, then they'd be committing is it a misdemeanor or felony to vote illegally? I mean, maybe the staff could let us.
Yeah, Representative Quam, I believe it's a felony, but
okay, so it's not a trivial offense, and so that's why I'm trying to get the clarity. But I look forward to offline finding out more detail and enlightenment from the Secretary of State's office. Thank you,
Secretary Simon.
Chair, one thing, and I don't want to belabor the point and take up more of the committee's time, except to say there's one thing that I really do need to correct for the record, and we can have the rest of the conversation offline. The number you're referring to are not, quote, bad registrations. They are people who had a challenge status on their registration, and I would bet everyone in this room a beer, your favorite beer, that there are multiple people in this room, including electeds, who have been on that list, either this year, last year, or in the past. I just think it's a matter of odds and probabilities, because people end up with the challenge status for all sorts of reasons. They move, they change their name, or whatever. So I don't think it's fair to say, legally or otherwise, that they are, quote, bad registrations. They're people who were flagged, and ultimately whom prosecutors and law enforcement decided, not to pursue, probably because there was no problem.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. I do still have three member questions on the list here, and I want to make sure we have time for amendments. Next on the list is Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, I tend to be a little bit cautious when you have to opt out. My question is, if somebody is not eligible to vote and they forget to check the box, will they be criminally charged?
Secretary Simon or Representative Schultz.
It will be verified by the Secretary of State's office. So they're not automatically registered to vote. That information will be transmitted to the Secretary of State's office, and then they will be verified as eligible or not eligible based on their age and their citizenship status. So it's not an automatic. And, from behavioral economics suggests that you're going to get higher participation with an opt-out versus an opt-in.
Representative Mason? Okay. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schultz. I do share the fact that I would rather people opt in rather than opt out. We do that right now with organ donation, and I think it really gives people time to think about it and to be very purposeful in what they're doing. My thing is, is this going to be on our licenses then? That says, I know you get a form saying that you're a registered voter, but then will it also reflect on a driver's license too, so people do know for sure?
Secretary Simon?
Well, I would defer to the
Representative Schultz.
I do not believe it will be on your driver's license, but you will get a card in the mail saying you're registered to vote.
Yeah. Representative Tyson?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I wish there was a better way to also keep renewing my motorcycle registration. I can't tell you how many times I've had to redo my license because they don't include my endorsement.
Sounds like an issue for the transportation
it does,
committee,
doesn't
Representative.
It? I know. But I thought I'd put my 2 cents in
sure.
Case.
Thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, and Secretary of State Simon. Just to be clear, I think the reservations that were brought up earlier related to folks who were doing same-day registration rather than this particular bill. And I don't want to belabor the point, but just to kind of underscore it, my understanding is that by having this bill and having those registrations go through early as part of your registration at the DMV, that will then allow sufficient and ample time for the checks and balances behind the scenes to go on to verify that voters are, in fact, who they say they are and that they live where they say they live and all of those things, and make sure that they are, in fact, eligible, which, again, would reduce the potential issues for fraud or abuse, and certainly would, in fact, increase voter participation. Is that, in fact, your assessment, Representative Schultz and Secretary of State Simon?
Representative Schultz.
That is correct. So if you believe voter fraud is a problem, you should support this bill, because it will transmit more accurate information and there will be fewer mistakes made.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Lyon? Okay. We are still, I guess, technically in the testimony period. Is there, I didn't see any other hands. I just want to ask one more time. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this? Okay, not seeing any, I'll close this. I'll close the public testimony portion. I do have a few amendments here. Is there anybody who would like to offer any of them? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll offer the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment, since we're making a switch from kind of an opt-in to an opt-out, where individuals will be kind of the AVR system of being automatically registered. There are individuals, whether we agree with it or don't agree with it, there are individuals in the state of Minnesota that are not, under current statute, allowed to vote. Those individuals that are not of age, don't have proper citizenship, or have a disqualifying conviction and haven't completed their sentence. Those individuals under current law are not eligible voters in the state of Minnesota. As the Secretary of State and staff have reminded everyone, it, of course, is a felony to register to vote or to cast a ballot if you're not an eligible voter in the state of Minnesota. It is not a minor thing. It is a big, big deal to accidentally do this or do this unwittingly. And so all we want to do is insert on the form language that clearly states that it is a felony for someone who's not eligible to vote, to register to vote, or cast a ballot. This doesn't change it back to an opt-in. It remains as an opt-out. It just provides very clear language so that anyone that might be uncertain of their status or not know if their probation time has expired or not know if they're eligible, to give them a moment to reflect and not unintentionally commit a felony while submitting this form.
Okay. Representative Schultz, any comments?
This is a friendly amendment, so I'm fine with it.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Okay. Any other amendments members would like to offer? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A2 amendment, which just is basically, you know, since the bill absorbs or has the Secretary of State's office absorb the associated cost of implementing, it's adding in the DPS does the same.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
I would like to bring DPS to testify on this and get their feedback, because we did request a fiscal note on whether it would incur costs for DPS.
Sure. If you could please come forward and just identify yourself for the committee and respond to the question.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Dawn Olson, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety. We do have some costs that will be incurred because of programming changes on the data set that we would be sending. And so we've done a little bit of preliminary review, and we would submit that cost as we put the fiscal note together. But preliminary, we don't have any concerns with the way the amendment is written.
Okay. Representative Quam?
Right. Working with the assumption of the author's statement, that this is just a very trivial change from opt-in to opt-out, and that the mechanisms are all present. I am assuming that, you know, if it's okay for the Secretary of State's office to absorb, but DPS, it'd be, they already have the functions.
Representative Schultz, do you have any comments, or
Well, I would like to wait for the fiscal note, but we can add this amendment in, and then when the fiscal note arrives, make a change.
Okay. Sounds like it's a friendly amendment. Any additional comments? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. Any additional amendments? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A5, and as you can see, basically it says that the steering committee has to establish that the Minlar system is functioning properly, and this is maybe it's a little bit of a belt and suspenders, but with all of the problems that have occurred and all of the talk we've had with felony possibilities and so forth, to ensure the integrity of that information from Minlars, I think before it happens, I realize there'll be a fiscal note, but there has been a lot of data problems and issues with the Minlar system, so I move the A5.
Representative Vogel moves the A5. Representative Schultz, any comments?
So thank you. This is Minlars is a completely different system, I'm informed by DPS. So this is not related to the underlying bill, so I am opposed to this amendment. I don't want to make this a political bill. I think the automatic voter registration bill, House File 45, should stand on its own without this amendment.
Okay. Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are the driver's licenses issued? I thought that was part of the Minlar's title whole system.
Representative Schultz, or would you like to have DPS come down to answer that question? Okay. Thank you. And if you could please, I guess it was Ms. Olson. You've already identified yourself.
Sure. Want me to repeat my name? Okay.
It's okay.
For the record, Don Olson with Driver and Vehicle Services. I'm the director. The Minlar system initially was intended to house both the driver and motor vehicle information systems. When it was initially launched, it only had the motor vehicle portion of our information system in that, and that is the one that has caused most of the constraints and the concerns. When we launched the driver's license system in October, we launched that under a completely different system. We brought in a vendor and they produced the system. So the work that would fall under this bill would come under the new driver's license system and not be part of the motor vehicle system.
Okay. Representative Zerwas? Or Representative Vogel, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Well, and I did think that it was part of the whole thing as it started off, and that's why my feeling is that we have to ensure the accuracy and the integrity of this data, and it's still originating at the same place, which is DMV. And I just feel that we have to protect as well as we can the integrity of the systems. And although the driver's license thing might have rolled out okay, I think there's still questions as far as the entire system and how that might function in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Representative Zerwas on the list and then Representative Nelson. So Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The reason I support the A5 amendment, members, we are under a time and fiscal constraint when it comes to the Department of Public Safety's inability to correct the issue with Minlars. I think any move in taking any technical minute resources, any moment of time away from making it so that your constituents and my constituents can transfer a title, can sell a vehicle, can get the certification they need to license or register a boat. Anything that takes time away from that, as I have yet another constituent that's on month 11 of trying to get a title for a motorhome so they can sell a motorhome. Members, this is a huge, huge catastrophe, and anything that we continue to pile on the Department of Public Safety's plate while this catastrophe has not been fixed, I think is irresponsible by this legislature. We're not saying we oppose this. We're not saying we necessarily want to delay this. All we're saying is let's get affirmation from the steering committee that they can handle this and they can move forward, and it won't be a drain on the resources and the efforts going to make sure that our residents and our voters can do, can get the very basics out of government service. Right now, the Department of Public Safety isn't able to issue a license plate, and yet we're compelled to ask them to do more. Instead of trying to pile more and more stuff onto a failing technology system, let's go ahead, let them focus on getting their head above water, and then move forward. That's what this amendment does, and I'd ask for a roll call on this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Roll call's been requested. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As the commissioner stated, the driver's license piece is not involved in the Minlars piece, so I don't understand why we don't just amend this amendment and have the Department of Health and Human Services computer system make sure that's fully functioning, and the court system's computer system make sure that's fully functioning. I think this is just another way to try to delay this bill and to delay this from happening, because, as was stated by the commissioner, Minlars has nothing to do with driver's licenses. It originally was intended for that, but it currently does not. The Real ID is a separate system, and we're dragging in stuff that is not part of the driver's license system.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Are there additional comments, questions? Representative Schultz, did you? Oh, wait.
Dwayne Sock.
Oh, okay. Representative Schultz, Representative Sock had a Sock.
Go ahead.
Representative Sock.
I just want to underline what he just said so that we don't all get pulled down the rat hole on this particular set of assertions as opposed to facts. These systems aren't related. The only relation is the big building that they all work out of. Now, I get the theoretical connection that if we give that group of people one more thing to think about, if we give that group one more thing to think about, that they're going to fall into greater dysfunction. I think that that is, in a lot of ways, throwing away other work that we have to do because we are in the process of trying to shepherd through a system that does obviously need attention both in resources and in our oversight. So I really would caution us to pull this down as a function of Minlar's both inability of us to supervise that product and the inability of that system to find its way. This, I do not think, is an analogous system, and it's not functioning out of the same place. In fact, the vendor, according to the processes that I remember last year and sitting in transportation, those systems are in a different company, a contractor outside of the functions that got mired down. So I really just caution that we don't draw them together as if it's by fact that they're all the same group. They are not.
Representative Schultz, you looked like you wanted to talk before.
Sure.
I did have two additional members raise their hands. So
I just want to comment on these questions. So if you look at lines 3.1 through 3.6, there is verification that the system is operational and can transmit that data. And they're currently transmitting data already. It's just going to be possibly more data that they're transmitting. So the system it would be just as it works today. So I don't think it would be a greater workload, you're just transmitting more data.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Quam? Pass? Okay. Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. I think Representative Salk covered some of what I was about to say, but so it is, I think moving ahead with this isn't going to be a problem. I think it'll be fine. But I just wanted to clarify something. I served on State Gov Finance last year, and I'm just going to go off the wagon here for a second. But it's, you know, we had the department come in there, and they tried to get more resources, and they just weren't allowed. And we weren't helping them. And it reminds me of like Monty Python. So we'd have them come in and say, help us, and then they'd have to, you know, I felt like it was that scene where they were like, they have to fight with no arm and no legs, and they're, you know, I'll fight you. But that's what you guys were asking them to do, and it was just frustrating. While they were standing there trying to ask for some help, yes, it was a bit of a mess, and we all admit it, the governor admitted it, but where they were asking for help, and you wouldn't help. So now you just kind of keep kicking the guy without the arm and the legs, or the lady, or whatever you want to say. So, I mean, it's good fun, but it was just kind of It's just sad to me because we had an opportunity to maybe improve and to do good work and to move Minnesota forward instead of just saying where the problems were.
It's just a flesh wound, Representative.
You stole my line. You stole my line.
That's the chair's prerogative, is to steal lines. Okay. Representative was. Representative Quam was next, and then I can call on you. Representative Quam.
Oh, I thought Mr. Representative Zero was going. Because of the last comments and discussion, frankly, it's not just the people you're hiring to do the project, and it's not just always the magnitude of the tweak you do to a modification on a system. It's the people that are interfacing with the contractors and the workers. It's the people that are overseeing, that are verifying. We had reassurances that DPS was fine with letting a system go through. And it's not just DPS, it's, you know, Minsure, Mets, a lot of software things, small and large, there have been issues with implementation. So there are concerns about the people that are looking after, interfacing, and controlling it that aren't maybe the technical people that are doing the programming, because sometimes the technical people just follow what you tell them to do, even if it doesn't make technical sense. So I see the amendment is just saying, let's be sure and also make sure that they're aware that we're watching and that we don't have to clean up after the fact. We don't have to throw an extra, was it $94 or $97 million that we threw onto the pile for more work with Minlars, and I think we also gave millions more after the fact. It's just that once you burned, maybe you're overcautious, but at least you're cautious about anything that has to do with redoing some of these systems.
Yeah. Representative Zerwas, did you have something to say beyond the Monty Python reference?
You stole my line. Mr. Chair, members, no, I was just saying in response to my good friend, Representative Lilly, you know, clearly, as Representative Quam said, the legislature did appropriate, you know, additional nearly $100 million. And then in the final days of session, we appropriated an additional $14 million that passed both the House and Senate, and the governor ultimately vetoed. So the idea that we didn't provide assistance or help these individuals is just, you know, it's an inaccurate assertion from my friend. But the reality is, this bill requires the Department of Public Safety to do more and more technical, tech-focused stuff, and they can't do what we've already asked them to do. And so I just don't understand how at this point it doesn't make sense to just say, we love your bill, let's move forward, but let's tap the brakes until the overseeing group says, yes, technically, the department can handle this work. We're not going to, you know, right now, I love you listen to Jim Gaffigan is one of my favorite comedians. He talks about, I have a two-year-old, and he talks about having five kids. And they said, what's it like when you're drowning? Or what's it like, I screwed up the joke already, what's it like when you have four kids and you find out that your wife is pregnant again? And he said, imagine you're drowning and someone hands you another baby. And so I feel like right now we have folks that are trying to save the day. And they're trying to pull Minlars back. And they're trying to keep the wheels on. And they're just trying to keep their head above water. And what does this do? It hands them another project to weight them down even more. And the idea that, well, this is done by a software consulting company, and so it's super easy and doesn't require anything from us. I guarantee you there are FTEs at the Department of Public Safety within DVS whose role it is to interface with those software companies in the implementation of the licensing. I guarantee that. And so the idea that we're not adding more and more work and responsibility onto them when they're also trying to prop up Minlars, I mean, what am I supposed to say to Mr. Anderson, who after 11 months can't sell his RV because he can't get a duplicate title, and all he wants is to sell an RV so he can buy a new RV so he can go down south for the winter? Well, guess what? It was really cold last week, and his RV was not down south for the winter. They have failed us, and I think it's irresponsible to pile more work on top of them.
Okay, we seems like we're people are getting more and more into this discussion here. Representative Elkins, did you have a comment? Or okay, Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz. Just to be clear, there are a few of us in this room who actually work in the technology field, and I just want to reiterate that we have already discussed that these are two completely separate systems being handled by two separate teams with different resources. There is no intersection between them, so we are not taking resources away from any particular person. So it would be my thought, and perhaps the chairs can weigh in, but the Minlars item should probably be taken into an offline discussion elsewhere so that we can continue forward with this bill. Thank you.
We do have an amendment before us. Thank you for that comment, Representative Bonner. Representative Schultz, did you have a comment, or are there any other?
I think we've moved off track a bit on the Minlars debate. I think I'd like to bring it back to the amendment.
Okay, Vogel. Representative Vogel, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the amendment. The reason for the amendment was because if you look back in the record, Minlars was started with a line item in the governor's budget of $12 million a year for 3 years back sometime around 2010. I don't believe there was a fiscal note, and therefore there probably wasn't a lot of debate relative to the systems and the process needed to implement. This simply says that basically the commissioner has to come up with a suitable answer to the way the data and the systems are working within public safety to make sure that it works before we go on another adventure. And this adventure could cost people a felony if it is not done right. That's the reason for the amendment, and that's the reason for the relationship with Minlars, is saying it's in the same department, it needs to be done right, and we can't do it half-heartedly like I'm assuming probably happened in 2010. And that's simply why it's there. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Schultz, any closing remarks on the amendment? Okay, seeing no additional member discussion, there was a roll call requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Sauk.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash. Representative Quam.
Yeah.
Representative Teese.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West.
Yes.
Okay, there being 11 nays and 7 ayes, the amendment is not adopted. We are to the bill as amended. Is there additional member discussion? Okay, not seeing any. Representative Schultz, any closing remarks?
I just want to thank the committee for hearing the bill and the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Zerwas?
At this point, we'll request a roll call on the bill itself.
Okay.
That sounds fine.
An amendment or a roll call has been requested on the motion to re-refer House File 45 as amendment as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Yes.
Representative Cagle. Yes. Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski.
Yes.
Representative Sauk.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Zerwas.
No.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Nash. Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
There being 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion is approved and the bill is continuing on its way. Any additional member questions before we adjourn? Okay. That's all the business before us. This meeting is adjourned.